WBRB UK. Worse teeth, better accents.
Hello, hello, and indeed ahoy, ahoy. Welcome to episode 423. We're still on our special holiday season, a little slightly shorter bite-size appetizers to the main course that will be a very long podcast throughout the rest of the year. So I'm Dan, one of your hosts.
Hello.
I'm joined by Tim. Say hello, Tim.
Hello, Tim.
And I'm joined by Coleman. Hello.
Hi.
Coleman.
Hello.
Right.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
It's a bit late for that now, isn't it?
Bit late, but I only just realised I could have done that.
It is a bit late. Well, that's one dumpster fire of a year behind us, so let's see what the next has in store for us. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great. But talking, well, we thought we'd do a little bit of a look back over the previous generation of consoles. A look back on what?
Don't look back in anger.
How about a little look back over my shoulder? I can see that look in your eye.
Yeah.
No Mike and the Mechanics fans here. Okay.
Okay. So, I mean, it wasn't that I didn't get the reference, Coleman.
Just didn't care.
Just, yeah.
Well, unless you want to look back like I'm doing.
That
was
a great
for the video yeah, fans.
Yeah. And
great
not
audio,
for audio.
Gag.
No. No, it wasn't.
Guys, nope. The PlayStation 5 is a thing. Everyone has one because they've been ample stock and there has been no problems whatsoever. But because of this, it means
is amazing, Coleman.
It means that the PlayStation 4 is a thing of the past, and we thought we'd take a little look back at the PS4 and some of our favourite titles. So, before we start, couple of ground rules. Much like the end of the year shows, 3 picks each.
No, I want 5.
Well, you've got 2 so far, Dan, so...
You can have remade games, but you can't have games that were just straight ports from the previous generation or other thing. The Witcher card game that Tim picked for his Game of the Year that came out 2 years prior. And also, these have to be PlayStation 4 console exclusives, so they could have come out on the PC. And I guess if they're timed exclusive that haven't actually been announced to be out on another console yet, that counts as well.
Yeah.
Alrighty-ho.
So who wants to start us off?
Can I just say, mea culpa here.
Yes.
Probably one of you two should go first, because I managed to put Journey down. It's one of my favourites.
Which is a straight port.
Now, technically speaking, it is in Metacritic's list of the best PS4 games.
Right.
And it was released as a remake on PS4. But, because I know that will just excite Tim too much getting one up on me, I'm going to look for another one.
Right.
All right?
Okay.
Okay. All right. So, talk amongst yourselves.
Well, shall I jump off first?
Tim, exactly. As per usual, you're likely to pick 18, and me and Coleman are going to need to just blitz through ours as quickly as possible.
I'll get through my 3.
Yeah. Go for it, mate.
But yeah, I think my 3 are 3 big heavy hitters as well in terms of games of this generation and games of the PS4. So first off, God of War. Definitely at the time. It was a fight between that and a game we'll come on to in a moment for my favourite game of all time. And I think it just about possibly got to the top. God of War was a fantastic game, not just from a gameplay standpoint, but like a technically impressive standpoint in terms of the cinematography of it and the way, just the way the whole game was kind of framed and shown to you. It was just, really impressive.
It's that kind of single camera shot, which, spoiler, it does eventually break once, but there is a single camera shot style to the game, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, and just it was visually very impressive. I think I'd played all the previous God of Wars at some point, but was never a massive fan of the franchise particularly. This game made me a massive, massive fan.
Well, it was a much needed, I thought, change of direction for the franchise, which was just kind of, when it first came out. When was the first God of War? 2009 or something?
It was the end of the PS2, so I'm not sure.
Where it was kind of, hey, look how edgy I am. Look at all the boobs and all the gore. Aren't games so grown up? And I'm really glad it's got away from that somewhat tired trope now. And actually...
I also think, just interestingly, stepping away from the whole Greek mythology kind of basis that it was all in, and if you'd have told me that it would have worked as well as I think it did, I don't think I would have believed you. Like, just going from Greek mythology to Norse mythology and kind of and having Kratos as a character be believable in that setting, you know, I never would have thought, and not only believable in that setting, but grounded and with his son and the relationship with his son that just developed throughout the game. Yeah, like just a fantastically enjoyable game, but also a highlight of gaming, I think. Like, it's something that I think if you show to someone else, why do I like video games? This is a good example of that. Like, this is something from a cinematic standpoint, or from a point...
Not sure that's a word, but we'll let it slide.
You know what I mean?
Like, a cinematic point of view.
Yeah, from a cinematic point of view, I think you could appreciate God of War, but then also you could show someone that and say, but it does these things which other mediums don't give me. The fact that I can customize my character's playstyle to how I'm playing the game, and the fact that I get to take on these big monsters and all this type of stuff. Like, I think it's a very good example of showing someone why I like video games, basically. So, yeah.
What I think really made it so impressive in that way is that no one really saw that coming from this franchise, and it's really reinvented it. And, you know, I think it's great. I hope they don't do this new formula until it's kind of, they're effectively beating a dead Trojan horse once again. See what I did there? See what I did there?
Yeah. But I could stand a trilogy.
Because the mythology, right, okay, and is Greek.
Yeah.
And the saying is, right, okay, beat dead horse. And I made it Trojan horse.
I remember after God of War 3, because essentially he kills all the Norse gods. The Greek gods. And that's why he's now in Norse mythology. And I remember a webcomic
right
where...
Out of gods, killed them all, mate.
Well, I remember in a webcomic, one of those kind of things, and they went, hey, now Kratos has killed effectively all the Greek gods. Who's he going for? And there's a picture of him going after Jesus and God. And I was like, that's quite funny. But when they finally unveiled God of War, because they were quiet for a while, Ascension didn't really take off the way they were hoping, I think, so they added multiplayer to that game. And when they came back with this new style, which I remember the unveiling at E3, no one saw it coming. It got a huge, huge cheer from the audience, and you know, different voice cast, all these kind of changes and stuff. And I remember specifically because of the slower looking pace of the game than the run around action masher kind of hack and slash type game, it was getting called a more Dark Souls God of War. And then when it finally came out, it's like, it's not a Dark Souls God of War, it's just a more methodical God of War, and it works for its benefit. And that axe mechanic.
That axe mechanic, yeah.
Which re-got, so good. It was like, hey, you feel like you're Thor in this game, which they then took those programmers to work on Avengers specifically for the Thor mechanic of throwing Mjolnir and pulling it back. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I mean, just a fantastic game straight up and down. But the one that it was duking out with, even in the same year for Game of the Year with me, was Marvel Spider-Man. And that,
another,
I think,
heavy hitter,
is fantastic. We talked about recently Miles Morales and the fact that that didn't quite make my Game of the Year list, not because I dislike the game or the character, because I love both, but just because it wasn't quite as memorable for me, and I think I was looking forward to it almost too much because I knew how good the swinging mechanic was already and all those type of things that going into the original game I had at least more doubts about, or, you know, wasn't as sure about. And I think for me, that just will be slightly more memorable in years to come, the original experience of playing through Marvel Spider-Man. Both this and God of War, interestingly, came, and my upcoming game, came at a time where I was particularly a generation when I was entirely fed up of open world games. But the selection of games, like all my top picks of this generation, are open world games, but they are all really great examples of the way to implement that and make it so that there's good player engagement with the environment and you don't get overwhelmed with stuff at once. And these are games that are obviously learned from previous mistakes of other games, but then also built on the successes that other games have had before them as well. But just doing things really well. Marvel Spider-Man, the combat, okay, may have taken some elements from Batman, which I think originally in previous generation.
If you're going to rip someone off, rip off from the best. That's why every action game plays like Batman now, you know?
But I think we'd agree that Marvel Spider-Man probably does that best, and to the point where it possibly out-Batmans Batman at time.
It's faster. I'll give it that.
I do think, and I put out a stupid tweet about this earlier in the year, but I do think
that... No, it's not like you.
I do think there's some real need for henchmen to be upskilled in the skill of looking up, and this may go very badly for Spider-Man and Batman. But yeah, like, there's some things that
henchmen
you have to kind of...
Henchmen can't look up, Tim. Everyone knows that. They're like dogs.
But there's some like slight leaps of logic that you need to ignore in the universe. But generally, like, it's a really interestingly... well-designed kind of version of New York that feels very livable and breathable, and it feels like a delivery on the promise of previous Spider-Man games were offering and never entirely delivered upon. And I think this one delivered in spades, and like, mission structure was good. Okay, it was a bit big, especially by the time you added some in the DLC, and like, there was a bit too much repetition to some of the stuff. But generally, yeah, it's a world that I like spending a lot of time in, was really good and enjoyable, and swinging through the streets of New York City literally never gets old, even a game later, basically. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, this was going to be on my list, but I left it open because I knew you were... Because even before you put yours in, I knew you were picking Spider-Man. So I'll leave that for Tim, just so we got some variety between games. Plus, you know, if you're listening to this show and you're like, oh, I haven't got a PS4, but I might pick one now on the cheap while the PS5s are out, and have a try at some of the classic games now. You can pick them up secondhand and what have you. I thought it'd be cool to have 9 decent games to recommend to people. And Spider-Man is definitely up there with me. I'm a massive Batman fan, but Spider-Man was there first for me.
And yeah, I think of the three that I'm picking, God of War is the only one that's available in the PlayStation Hits collection when you're going to a PS5. But if you didn't play God of War or any of the other games and you find them available and stuff, then yeah, these are definitely games worth playing. If you skipped out on PS4 generation and you're coming to PS5, these are some good games to pick up.
God of War is part of the PlayStation Plus collection as well.
Yeah, yep. And my next game is probably no surprise to anyone that's heard our Game of the Year picks for this year. But yeah, Ghost of Tsushima. Absolutely loved it from start to finish. Fantastic game, breathtaking world. I won't go into too much detail because I have talked about it very recently. But yeah,
that's never stopped you before, well, though, Tim, in all fairness.
But yeah, like, just it's a setting that I don't think we've seen many games in. It was a very well delivered, focused vision that kind of very stylized, very enjoyable. Really enjoyed the combat. And I think it's between these three games as to which order these three games are now in for my three favorite games of all time, basically. So for me, the PlayStation 4 has hit some good heights. I don't know if we want to talk about the console itself overall, but I think some of my abiding memories are things that have now been dealt with well by the PS5, I'll say, is the fact that a bit too much of my time that I would have liked to have spent gaming was sat watching update screens or waiting for things to do, and lots of loading screens and all that type of stuff. But generally, my takeaway from this generation of games will be some really fantastic games. And as I said, I think those three, possibly as it stands, Ghost of Tsushima being my favourite, God of War being second, and Marvel Spider-Man a close third. But I never would have guessed at the end of this generation I'd be going for three open world games as my three picks of the generation as well, basically.
Yeah, and you say open world, and it's three very different styles of open world game as well, because God of War, it's the trick of, it's the linear path. It looks like a linear path, but then the further you progress, you realize it's the like the Souls-like games, to coin one of those. You're following this linear path that eventually opens up and opens previous things, and then it's actually a really large looking set piece that you're playing with. Marvel Spider-Man, big open world, but open like straight from the start. Ghost of Tsushima, it's the GTA style
open
sections,
areas,
and
I
then
think.
But yeah, very different types of open world games, but
also
all interesting.
None of them Ubisoft games, interestingly, considering that they are like. But just interestingly, they make more open world games than anyone, and you would think they would be the masters of that. Sort of thing.
I would say, Timothy, this is best of PS4, and the implication is that it's got to be a PS4semi-exclusive.
But for me, as I said, like, that's not just my three favorite games of the PS4. That's probably my three favorite games of all time. And yeah, them being just interesting that they are open world games and not a Ubisoft game. But I would say that Ubisoft tend to churn out open world games, and these three games, you can see that all these games benefited from extra development time and a bit of extra time in the oven. And that love and care and attention to me comes across in how I enjoy the game and noticing how much care and attention has been put into the design of everything in the game, basically. So yeah, and how that fits together.
But it's an interesting thing that you did mention there, Tim, which is, you know, possibly by accident, the idea of kind of actually why this has been a really great generation for games. And a bit of me almost thinks is this the first time that kind of mainstream video game consoles, which let's face it, is the way the majority of people interact with kind of gaming entertainment. Is it the first time that the technology finally got to a point where it could offer a more immersive, well-crafted, kind of artful storytelling experiences?
I don't think the technology has necessarily been a massive limitation to that before. And I think in some ways, for these open world games, it's this generation of technology which will make these type of games even more enjoyable. So I actually think that's been as much of a problem as it has been a positive aspect for them. But I don't know. I think it's something where, as I said, going into the next generation, like there are issues that all these type of games had that just we won't be having going forward. But I do think that, I don't know, there's something definitely to be said from, at least for me, in the appreciation of a game that has had all the time it's needed, basically. And in recent current climates, we've seen with Cyberpunk that definitely not being the case.
Never heard of it.
Underbaked.
Show me a storefront where I can buy it, Tim, and I'll believe that's a thing. But
I believe that's GOG.com.
But yeah, I mean, as I said, like, yeah, let's go with a bit more of a positive. But yeah, there have been some fantastic games on the PS4, and these were the three ones that really kind of like held themselves head and shoulders above everything else for me. But I do think there's been some great games of this generation. So
good.
Coleman.
I would like to go and say, and this first choice that I had, this is the one that I keep swapping out.
Okay, we'll get into that, why it is, but go for it, Colm.
Well, okay, so Final Fantasy Remake I went for, which...
7 Remake.
Yes, I know, it will... It's a timed exclusive till February or April, I think it is.
That counts for now.
They haven't confirmed... Square Enix have not confirmed what platforms it's going to. We know it's PC, might be Xbox, we don't know yet. But
I think it'll
moment,
probably just be PC, to be honest.
It might just be PC, we don't know. Square Enix definitely have some money they need to make up for. But yeah, Final Fantasy Remake. So, and it's because this game, and again, I kept swapping out between the God of War remake and Shadow of Colossus remake and the infamous Second Son, which... Again, two other titles.
That's a good game.
But Final Fantasy Remake I went for because this game, it took a game that is one of my favorite games of all time, something that I have poured years of my life into, replaying again and again and again. And even I enjoyed the first game, I enjoyed the PlayStation version so much as a teenager that I think it took me a year to complete the game because I was messing around with side stuff, trying to be a completionist. Before I knew what that was. So to bring that game, and this all kind of started with when they were presenting the PlayStation 3, Square came out with a demo of what Final Fantasy VII would have looked like if it was made for the PlayStation 3. That got chopped out, re-uploaded, and rumored as an actual release. People got excited, frothing at the bit. Eventually for the PS4, we did get the Final Fantasy VII remake. I think they announced it at the same time as God of War as well, the E3 presentation of Dreams. And I was one of those people that got hyped. And, I never fell for the PlayStation 3 remake, but I was definitely hyped for this one. And then when it came out, it was, yes, okay, the voice acting in it is shonky as hell. But everything else, it is a gorgeous looking game. It hits all the right nostalgia tropes for me. And the majority of nostalgia for Final Fantasy VII for me does come from the opening few kind of missions which are covered in this game.
Yeah.
What it then does is expands on that and opens up the kind of first disc of the game into such a way, going on these side missions and things that you just don't expect but thoroughly enjoy. One of the ones when I was reviewing it for the show originally, I mentioned that Cloud is... He's a soldier. He's first class soldier They mention that. Who else do we know in Soldier? Sephiroth and Zack. And I think that's the only soldiers we ever meet. But it's meant to be this elite group of soldiers that are available like all over Midgar. And continue to travel all over Midgar. You never see another one. So they throw soldiers for you to battle in these games. And yeah. They are these amazingly powerful, cocky kind of characters. And it's very cool. Like little things like that I really like. Now, where this is different is when they say Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I know this was something we were talking about before the game actually came out, is this a game that you're buying and then they're releasing episodes down the line? Is it a game in a series of games that you're buying to tie into Final
Fantasy
VII? I'm still
confused now, and I've played a lot of it.
Okay. basically, it's not going the way you think it's going to go, and there's some kind of, without spoiling too much, there's some timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, messing around with the timeline kind of thing.
No!
So when they say remake, they don't mean a remake of the game, they mean the story has been remade, and that's where the title comes from. So the next game will be a sequel, but not in the way of this is Final Fantasy VII Part 2.
Right.
This is Final Fantasy VII.
Be a sequel to the remake.
A proper sequel to this remake that you're not expecting things to go. And for someone who's such a huge fan of Final Fantasy VII, that's really cool to me, because it basically meant, here's a canonical story that you didn't know about that you're now getting years and years, like decades later.
just for those of you who might not be so steeped in Final Fantasy VII lore, is it kind of true wibbly-wobbly alternate timeline stuff, or is it, here is a bit of the story you didn't see that was kind of alluded to behind the scenes?
Both.
Wow, double-dipping.
Yeah. Both. In the kind of side stories, it's here's behind the scenes what you didn't see, we're going to explore that more. But then things will change, and you'll, like, one of the earliest things you see is this spirit, like these ghost things flying around everywhere. It's like, well, this was never in the game. This never happened at this point. And then as the game progresses, different things will happen, and you'll be like, but this never happened. And it's because someone's messing with it. So something's happening, and that's all I'm going to leave it at. Yeah, it's if you've gone for, and unfortunately it does mean it is a game for people who are fans of Final Fantasy VII, because you kind of need to know what's going on.
This wasn't, yeah. If you didn't, how, as many people rightly do, hold Final Fantasy VII in such high esteem,
yeah.
Would this, if it had nothing to do, I know it's a bit of a pithy question, but if it, let's just say hypothetically it was an RPG that had nothing to do with Final Fantasy VII, do you think the guts of it are still enough to make it a compelling experience, or do you think that having experienced the prior original versions of Final Fantasy VII is almost kind of a necessary thing to get the most out of this game?
If you took out all the Final Fantasy stuff and it was, this is JRPG the game, it's essentially a mix of the Yakuza games mixed with the Kingdom Hearts titles, and that works. It's a very fun game. It's a good time sink. But the game as it is something, I think you could probably play this if you've never played Final Fantasy VII before, but then things will be lost on you. You won't go, well, why is this different? Because you don't know it's different. So, you know, you'll be missing out on that bit. However, they have re-released Final Fantasy VII on every single console now, and I think if you play it on the Switch, there's like a 2x speed mode to get you through the battles and things, so you could quite easily get through it. I think friend of the show, Rick, did it in like 2 weeks.
Don't give yourself hemorrhoids whilst playing this on the toilet setting,
I remember Rick got it on the Switch, I got it on the Switch, and then every morning he'd come and go, how far are you on Final Fantasy? I'm at this bit now, I'm at this bit. And so, yeah, you can get through the original pretty quick with the 2x speed thing going. My second pick is Bloodborne, and it's a game I've recently just started playing Bloodborne again as well. This is a game that I had no interest in the Dark Souls games, Demon Souls games at all. Game, I guess plural now, because it's a PS5 game. But anyway, when Bloodborne was coming out, I think we were doing a stand at EGX Rest, and they had Bloodborne right across from us. And eventually I went, you know what? I'm going to go play some Bloodborne. Mainly because they're giving away Bloodborne Sackboy statues.
And I want one of them.
I want me a Hunter Sackboy. I've still got him somewhere. And I went over, played it. I went, okay, I didn't understand what was going on. I did some puzzles. And then I saw a group of people and they just absolutely kicked the crap out of me without me realizing what was going on. I was dead, demo over. And then I kept hearing, as I was talking to people serving them at the stall, They go, oh, have you tried the Bloodborne yet? Yeah, it's really good. Day one, picking it up. I don't get it. I'm going to pick this up. I'm going to buy this day one. I'm going to play the heck out of some Bloodborne. I'm going to figure out what the flip I'm doing with this game. And I ended up getting so into it that I would come, I'd wake up, I'd play, I'd finish, I'd get ready, work, I'd go to work, I'd come home, I'd play more, I'd eat dinner, I'd play more. And
sounds a bit like lockdown, mate. I'm not going to lie.
It's
except with going out the house, and yeah, maybe it's not that much like it.
If it gets its hooks in you, this game is an incredibly addictive game. And it got to the point like I was having Bloodborne dreams. I'd wake up at 4 a.m. and go, oh, that was weird. I'm going to play some Bloodborne. You know, I would go, oh, do you know what? I've got half an hour. I'm going to play some Bloodborne and then I'm going to go to bed. And then I'll play some Bloodborne and I'll look and go, it's 4 a.m. again. I'm doing it again. So I got really, really into this game. And it's kind of, and I've said this so many times on the show now, it's probably losing all meaning, but the Souls games, what they do is they made the most ridiculously hard RPG. What Bloodborne does is they went, okay, we're going to take some of those mechanics out, make it faster, and they've made the most intensely difficult hack and slash game. And I love it for that, because I'm this kind of, and I know it's not technically not a hack and slash game, but in my mind, you know, there was Devil May Cry 3, and then suddenly Bloodborne came into my life and just knocked it out of the park. So
what was it then about, like, I mean, bearing in mind that you said you never really saw the appeal of the Souls-like games, was it like the min-maxing aspect of it? Was it this kind of almost a game of chess you had to play with enemies and how you approach them?
As an outsider looking in, the kind of way that, I mean, my attention was first drawn to the Souls games was everyone saying, hey, there's this game that you have to import from another country and it's really, really hard. And I went, okay. I go, yeah. But after you play it like 100 times and you've died so many times, you'll get really good at it. That does not sound appealing to me whatsoever. And then the same with, and then Dark Souls was kind of pointed out to me by, I think it came out, I don't know if it was the first or second game, but it was around about when Skyrim came out and I got really into Skyrim. And then suddenly all these people were like, yeah, Skyrim's for kids, you know, you want to play some Dark Souls, that's where it's at. And then I looked into that, why do I want to play it?
I've warned you about this before.
Nah, I think this is before I was part of Big Red Barrel. But yeah, the kind of way it was pointed out to me once again was, you should play it because it's hard. Okay, well, I want to play more games, not just get stuck on one game and have to get good scrub. So that was the kind of turn off for me. But there was something about trying Bloodborne and it perplexing me, going, there's the bones of something here and I don't understand what it is. I think at the time it was like some kind of PayPal offer that meant if you bought it, they gave you £25 back. So I essentially got it for half price. That was the only reason I bought it day one.
What a saving.
So Bloodborne, I recommend for everyone. And
that's on PlayStation Hits collection as
well.
That's
on the Hits collection as well. I remember speaking to my girlfriend about it and she said she got her PlayStation with Bloodborne, tried it, went, not for me, gave it to her brother. He really got into it. So I keep going. I want to try get back into that Bloodborne one day.
Maybe try suggesting it in a different voice.
Yeah, slightly less creepy.
You want to play some Bloodborne?
I like it when it beats me. Oh, you want to try
good scrub.
Bloodborne, recommend
different
for everyone.
Voice. Use a different voice. And of course, it is also available on the PC. That's a slight, you know, that got you with this
not
list.
On the PC.
But yeah, your next game is
available on PC?
No, Bloodborne's not on the PC unless you do the...
Can we just edit that out then, please?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to leave it in.
No, I'm going to leave it in. Edit in harder, Coleman.
I could have sworn it was out on the PC as well. And of course, it is also available on the PC. And of course, it is also available on the PC.
Shame.
Sorry, I've just got to go and be walked through the village square naked. Back in a minute. All right.
If you do PlayStation Now, I think technically you can play it on PC, but
Thank you, Coleman. That was very gracious of you.
There's no, and I think as well, if you play it on PS5, it's still locked at 30, which is a shame. I'd love to try this game on 60.
Your next game, Mr. Coleman, I have lined up to download on my PS5 at some point.
Is this part of the collection as well?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay.
And apparently has been boosted for PS5 as well.
Yes, I saw that. I'm very excited. So this is something coming out of left field for this show, because on the way in, I don't think any of us were excited about it. I picked it up on a whim and really got into it. This is Days Gone.
Oh. Well, now this is a bit controversial.
Yeah.
Because I think it's not unfair to say the reception for this particular title was lukewarm. And it was somewhat derided as being derivative and not kind of really being a bit too sprawling for its own good, and could have been better being a bit more kind of tightly focused in what they wanted it to be. So I'm interested to hear, Coleman, why this found its way to the, floated its way to the top of the porcelain bowl for you.
And I want to take from what you said with the mediocre scoring of Days Gone, and I want to direct your attention to, oh, it'll shame them. It's IGN Podcast Beyond. I listen to that show along. I like getting a vast array of opinions on different games when they come out.
Yeah.
And Days Gone is one of those ones that I really got into. Listen to their podcast, which I think they gave it like an 8 or a 7. Like, it's a good score for what it is. But they felt the need to defend their score and say, again, on the show, they went for ages going, oh, yeah, it's very derivative of other games. And, this would be the best game on the PS2 or the PS3, but not on the PS4. And then in the end, it's like, well, how far are you in? Oh, about 120 hours. How far are you in? Oh, I'm about 180 hours. Like, what? How can you play a game that much if you don't like it?
I mean, Kev's put a lot of time into Destiny, is all I will say. And I'm still not convinced he likes it.
That's your fault. You're pushing it on
Stockholm syndrome.
You're a bad man.
Yep. That's right. I am Bungie's pimp. You are correct. Yes.
Days Gone, you play a biker, part of a biker gang, and then a big zombie outbreak. I know everyone goes, well, they're not zombies, they're freakers. They're freakers in the sense of you can't call them zombies in this world because zombies don't exist in this world. That's why no one knows what they're expecting. Walking Dead rules. Freakers, they're zombies. So, zombie outbreak happens.
I think you'll find it was a freaker outbreak.
And then what you're left with is kind of less the start of Walking Dead and Walking Dead These Days, where they've got these different settlement camps. Everyone kind of works with each other, trades with each other and stuff, but then there's enemies and things. There's people that have gone mad and they live out in the world thinking that the zombies are the next form of evolution, so they want to appease them and praise them like gods and stuff and carve up their own bodies, and it's all
basically
very bleak,
post-zombie apocalypse, basically.
Yes.
Kind of setting.
What you end up with is a game where an open world zombie game where you get a motorbike and you have to go out into the world, do missions for people, try figure out what the cause of the zombie outbreak
was. Get petrol
was and,
or gas.
Yeah, stop and find petrol and scavenge for ammo and items to craft to use as weapons and things. And it's incredibly engrossing, I found. I've put so many hours into this game and I've still not finished it. I'm on the last section of the game, I think, but it goes on and on and on. So you do have to take breaks and do it in chunks. But it just ended up being... And I don't know, I keep talking about Walking Dead over these last few episodes, but this is, if you're au fait with that show or comic at all, this is Daryl Dixon, the game. You drive around on a motorbike, you can use a crossbow and take things down stealthily. One of the best things about this game, and it's something they touted at the initial reveal of this game, was the ability to just have so many zombies
hordes
on the screen at one go. Just zombie hordes. Which the first time it happens, and there's about 50 zombies rushing you, I think I was driving past like a crashed train, and then all of a sudden out of a cargo hold, 50 zombies just come rushing out at you. I'm like, oh, get on the bike, go, go, go! Because
it almost sounds a bit like that kind of the first time you ever played Left 4 Dead, where there is like a true horde, like, oh my actual God.
Which one of my favorite things to do in Left 4 Dead when I first started playing that game way back when, because I'm still impressed by it now, was you could be in that game and then people are discussing like, what's the best thing to do? And I go, I'm bored. Shotgun a car. Car alarm goes off. Run away. And then watch all these hordes of zombies flooding in. But what happens with this, it's more like you'll come across your first horde of zombies and be like, that's 50 zombies. I can't deal with that. Drive away. Get better weapons. Get better, more powered up. Come back in, take them all down, you worked out how to do it, you feel great. Then you come across 100 zombies, then you come across 200 zombies, then you come across 300, and the hordes just keep getting bigger, and it's ridiculously hard to figure out how to beat some of them. And eventually, you start going through ways of, okay, so if I throw a Molotov cocktail at a group and then drive ahead on my motorbike, then get off and start shooting at them with a machine gun or something, then climb up this thing and then shoot them from there with a shotgun and then throw a grenade down and then jump off and then go through this crack in a fence so they all have to kind of funnel through. I can wait at the other side of the fence and just start shooting them as they're funneling. Stuff like that. It's really, really cool. I'm really sad they didn't add any kind of expansion to this game because I think it would have really, really benefited from it. But they did put in some tie-in stuff with Death Stranding.
Okay.
Another contender on my list. Where you can, because you can upgrade your bike and you can have, so the petrol tank is a BB tank. Ah. So every now and then you're driving along and then this little baby's like floating about going, hey. It's really creepy.
Surely in the world of the Freakler, that's just a nice appetizer before you chow down on the main course. It is the grown up on the bike.
But yeah, BB tank. And again, once they announced that, that kind of pushed me to go, I need to get into this game that I started playing, and then I really got into it. But you don't unlock that thing until way late in the game, but it's cool when you do. But yeah, there you go. That's my three. Final Fantasy Remake, Bloodborne, and Days Gone.
Interesting three, Mr. Common.
Indeed. Thank you. Well, having a look at the time, I'm going to try and be quick for mine, since I know we are already running long. So, I mean, one of these I kind of alluded to in the kind of stuff we're looking forward to in 2021.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've put down here as my first one, these are not necessarily in any order, Horizon Zero Dawn, just because. Ooh. I don't know, I'm a sucker for
robot dinosaurs.
Well, robot, who doesn't love a robot dinosaur, right?
Robot dinosaurs!
Everyone loves a robot dinosaur. And there is just something about the post-apocalypse, it seems like, where it's kind of like how what we recognize in modern society, how that's all broken down and how nature is always ascendant above all. And there's just something quite humbling about that setting, which I kind of find quite interesting. And it's all about unpicking the story of how that came to be, humanity's last days in its golden age, as it were, when it was technologically advanced, and how that advancement was ultimately its own undoing. And, you know, obviously it's become a bit of a trope these days, but I just find that just fascinating, and how that technology is viewed by some as almost kind of like godlike and kind of spiritual and something that should be revered because they don't understand how it works. So I just think it's a fascinating, fascinating story, that game.
Fascinating universe as well, generally, as you say.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
And they absolutely nail the presentation of it as well. It doesn't feel... It could have so easily felt gimmicky at so many points, but I don't think it did. And there's really great character. The character evolves not only in terms of the story that you're following Aloy through. I mean, she's a really interesting, well-written, deep character, but there's also, from a gameplay point of view, I think the kind of the gradual unlocking of abilities. And again, it's kind of got that, the more skills you have, the more areas you can access, that kind of stuff. But, you know, I thought it was a corking game, and really great narrative, really great voice acting in it as well. I mean, I think it kind of kept you engrossed for a good long while and didn't drop the can too badly anywhere in it.
It was even better when they patched it after launch, because I think initially there was a lot of problems with lip syncing to the voice acting, so it kind of took you out of it a bit. But going back and trying it again, that seems to be mostly fixed.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, all games are going to have their technical problems, and yeah, that was a real shame at launch that's what happened to Horizon. But I think, you know, it's a game that has stood the test of time, and I think as not just as a game, but as kind of as a narrative, as a story to bring you in and become engaged with something, I think it's, you know, it's one of the best out there, definitely.
I loved it at the time, and yeah, it's really good game, and one I always meant to go back to and finish, and just kind of abandoned at some stage and never went back to. But I'm not entirely sure why. Should be on my list of things
long.
That I should actually, you know,
is
try
it
and finish
you
up
hate
at some
gingers,
point.
Tim?
Probably.
Wow, I wasn't expecting you to confirm that, but yeah.
Okay. He does hate
Tim
gingers.
Hates gingers, you heard
we
it
We know
here
this.
First.
We know this to be true.
Yeah.
I think my thing was that I started playing it and then other games came out, and it's quite a long game when you get into it. And plus, it's got that Ubisoft open world mentality where they go, here's a bunch of stuff you can do on the side, and then you track away so far from the story that you go, well, I don't really need to play this right now when I can play this, and then you come back and go, I don't know what's going on with the story.
The pacing of it, sometimes you could become overpowered quite quickly if you spent a lot of time on the side stuff in that game, which could take away from like kind of dramatic tension of some of the encounters.
I think though, thinking about it, my actual problem was that it was quite a complicated game in terms of like the different powers you had and everything else that was going on. And then I think it was semi-difficult to pick up again after a period of not playing it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's one of those games where that would be the case, definitely.
I think that made it slightly harder to go back to, possibly. So.
But no, it's a corking game.
But yeah, a great game. I should go back and pick it up again and play through.
And there's an expansion. They do like throwing on sale a lot on the PlayStation Store, because I was playing Tim's copy before and then eventually went to get my own copy. I think I paid like £15 on the store, and they threw in the game and the expansion in one hit. So
totally worth it if you like. Find it on sale for something like that.
Yeah.
If you need something long, have they put this in the PlayStation Collection, or is this?
I was trying to think. I'm not sure that it is, but I would have thought it might be.
Yeah, I heard rumblings that it was getting its own PS5 re-release when that you get the next.
It would make sense to bring out a boosted version of that just before the new one comes out. Basically,
do a Spider-Man. Yeah.
Well, I think you can pick it up pretty cheap from most high street retailers. So it's well worth, if you can find it for, you can probably find it for under a tenner these days, to be honest with you. And if you can find it for under a tenner, just go have a look at that, because it's a great game.
By Grabthar's hammer, what a savings.
Hammer. Indeed.
Hammer.
So next up from me is the holy crap, I forgot Journey originally came out on the PS3, but I still love it, and it was great in the PS4 2 edition. I've gone all indie for my second one that I think is a notable mention. This was out relatively early.
Wasn't it a launch game or very near?
Yeah, it was a very, very near launch game.
It was a launch triple platform game, because it came out on PS3, PS4 and Vita at the same time.
But Resogun, a really fun shooter. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's not a particularly deep game, but is it a great pick-up twitch shooter, try and beat your mate's high score? Yeah, it was great. And part of the appeal was that you really could take it anywhere. I can remember, you know, playing it on the Vita in the days when I lived in London, on the tube, come back home, being able to kind of carry on chasing the high scores on my PS4 pretty seamlessly. It's a great, really unique visual style to it, really tight controls, knows exactly what it wants to be, is not bloated in any way, this game, and is just really engaging and fun in short bursts. So Resogun, you know, I think it's a game a lot of people have probably forgotten, to be honest with you.
Was it also relatively near the top of the list of games as you were looking through, Dan?
No.
Okay.
No, because it begins with... Because it begins with R, you idiot.
Well, if you go through the games of generation, then it's often in release order. But, you know, hey.
It's funny because the Resogun was like one of the biggest peaks for Housemarque, the developers. And then and that's at the start of the PlayStation launch. And then as we start carrying on with the PS4, we almost ended up with the end of Housemarque. They're like, we're not going to make arcadey games anymore, because they're just not making money. We're losing money. We're gonna work on I think they were gonna work on a battle royale game before they canned that idea. And then with the launch of the PS5, they're making a really cool looking game now. So like they kind of went on this upward, downward, then back up again. So it's interesting to see with all from Resogun.
Yeah, indeed. Mm-hmm. So that is a corking game, and you can definitely find that cheap many a place on the internet, I would have thought.
You might already have it and not know.
Yeah. And last up, I think this is probably one that it would be on all of our lists, but we've done our best to try and each have a separate list.
Yeah, this was on my list, and then you put it in.
Yeah, is Uncharted 4. So the swan song for kind of the Nathan Drake quadrilogy.
The swan song for... the mass murdering archaeologist, but yeah.
Hey, look, you know, he's still a nice guy. You know, mass murderers can be a nice guy as well. You know, he's So apart from all the mass murdering and misappropriation of cultural relics from civilizations that are now oppressed. I mean,
are we still talking
things,
about Uncharted 4 or the British Museum?
possibly both.
Right, okay, just so you know.
So Uncharted 4 was very much the culmination of the Nathan Drake story. And it was kind of not only was it...
And his brother.
Playing it... And his brother. And it was very much looking back. There was lots of kind of retrospective bits on Nate's life. And kind of quite an interesting dissection of why him and his brother have the relationship that they do. And I thought, you know...
And why he wasn't mentioned in the first three games.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah, they managed to retcon that quite nicely, I thought.
Can we just point back to the rope thing as well? Because that was one of my... That was one of the funniest things to me when the game launched, because not only do you find about this brother that you've never heard of in the previous three games, four games if you count the Vita title as well, but then his ability to use rope and the kind of way the game, quite early on in the start, he's going through his attic that has all these different things from adventures that he's collected along the ways, and there's little references to the previous games. But there's a point where there's like a picture of Sam and Nathan, and then there's like a rope next to him, and he's like, he's pining for the photo. He's like, my brother. But really, in my head, he's going, rope. I forgot how to use rope, because he uses them in cutscenes in the past, but which are predate the previous Uncharted games. But then when we get to this, like for three games, he forgot how to use rope, and then he goes,
he's getting on a bit,
rope.
Bless him, really.
I still love magic rope is the best.
I think what I liked about it was that it did kind of, aside from the aforementioned cultural misappropriation and mass murdering, it did really kind of unpick Nate as a bit of a flawed hero in many ways. And I think that kind of gave the character a nice bit of humanity, aside from just kind of like the wisecracking and kind of the big set pieces of, oh, we've nicked this thing. Turns out that was really important in keeping the Earth together in one place. Now there's going to be some kind of cataclysm. Oh, bugger.
Yeah, and was it Nate that kind of drove you to pick Uncharted 4 over The Lost Legacy that came out a bit later? Or was it just slightly the bigger game, bigger set pieces?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I mean, and I was going to say this in our kind of Xbox One look back. I mean, this was the kind of the console generation where I kind of really segued over to mainly gaming on PC. And I think the only reason that isn't there is because, frankly, I haven't played it.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
so,
fair enough.
As this generation has developed, you've played less and less time on console. So that's fair enough that you're... Some of your picks are from earlier in the console lifecycle.
Yeah, but still worth looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love Uncharted 4, and I love the Lost Legacy expandalone title. But I love the Lost Legacy in the same way that I love Miles Morales. Like, it's a quicker, snappier story and stuff. But where it's different for Uncharted 4, like in Spider-Man and Miles Morales, they have the same map, the same areas and stuff. There's new stuff in Miles Morales. In Uncharted 4 and in Lost Legacy, Uncharted 4 has all these different vibrant locations. Lost Legacy has one or two, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's more the variety of set pieces and stuff. Plus, Uncharted 4 has a Secret of the Monkey Island Easter egg, which I love.
Yeah, and just to bring this full circle as well, I had to say that Uncharted 2 and Mass Effect 2, just to give that a quick mention, were my two previous favorite games of all time. And for me, God of War, Spider-Man, and Ghost of Tsushima have ousted there now. But yeah, like all three of those were just ahead of Uncharted 4. That's definitely, you know, a good pick, a game I really enjoyed at the time. But I think the three that I mentioned have taken things to a greater level since, that one came out, basically. But yeah, but as I said, a good pick.
Yeah,
picks by all.
I thought so.
I would say our list is notable for the lack of... Last of Us 2, I would say, possibly. I know that was a consideration for you, Coleman, but I mean, between the three of us, you would have thought that Nine Games may have mentioned that one, but I can see why it wasn't on any of our lists for the three of us. I'm just saying that's a noticeable...
The two reasons for that. Initially, it was going to be Uncharted 4 or Last of Us 2 in my list, and I was umming and ahhing over those. I went for Uncharted 4, and then also, because I put The Last of Us Part 2 in my Games of the Year, I didn't want to repeat it in the PlayStation 4 stuff, because I was umming and ahhing between Last of Us Part 2 and Final Fantasy Remake in my Games of the Year. So I went, you know what? The other one's going in here just for a bit of variety.
Yep, indeed.
There you go.
Indeed. Well, I think That was that. That was the PS4. Good night. Yeah. In your box. In your box you go. See you later.
I do have to say that I think it was a fantastic console generation for the PS4. Like, I do think there has been fantastic games pretty much all throughout its life cycle. Really enjoyable console. It's hard to argue with the three games being my three games of all time. This might not be my favourite console of all time, possibly, I think.
That's fair enough. I mean, I've got a hell of a lot of use out of my PlayStation, even if like more so than my Xbox 360 became my media box, the PlayStation became my media box, but faster. So,
but also, I haven't mentioned any PSVR in this as well, and that's been another thing for that generation.
Good, shut up.
It's been a generation of enjoying VR games, and that being another string to the bow of PS4 as well, basically.
And if ever I lose the power of sight, touch wood, that won't happen, but just turning on my PlayStation 4 will allow me to navigate around my house because of the noise it makes, so that's something going for it as well. I'll be able to work out
it's
where
like
I am in relation
Dan,
to my front room. It is
Sonyar.
Danar.
Yeah, where?
Mine was better.
Yeah, neither were great though, so let's move on. We need to finish off this show. Next time on BRB UK we'll be having a little chat about looking back on the Xbox One. Was it the one box to rule them all?
I just realised we maybe should have pointed that out before spending like the best part of an hour talking about PS4, because there's some Xbox out there that's just exploded through us. Yeah, not talking.
No, it's fine.
Mentioned that earlier.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So,
still clicks.
That is your lot for this episode. So, thank you ever so much for listening. As always, make sure you go to www.bigredbarrel.com, twitter.com/bigredbarrel, and you can even go to facebook.com/bigredbarrel. And, what looks of mercy other things, because you're all twitch.tv/bigredbarrel TV. And if you go to our front page, you can also come say hello on the Discord, for we have a Discord, and we like to say hello to people there, and generally, Jake, some fun is had by all. Good. Marvellous. I thought so. Great. So, we're going to go now. And what that usually means is that I get to remind you that I have been Dan.
I might have been Tim.
I've been your PlayStation fanboy number one with my last Guardian
last
t-shirt.
Guardian. That's another game we didn't mention.
Yeah. There you go. I've been Coleman.
You have. Right. So, we're out of here, ladies and gents. Thank you ever so much for listening. And until next time, dear listeners, toodle bye. PlayStation. Drop the beat.
You and your ears are quite welcome
for the podcasting goodness that you just heard.
Why not roll on over
to BigRedBarrel.com
for more podcasts,
news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.